Desolation Angel Radio, April 14th, 2020. I'm so used to saying that with an uplift lilt in my voice. If you're new to the show and a new subscriber or have just started listening during now this last month and a half where I try and put a show out every night. I miss about one night a week. Of what's happening to us, what we are becoming, the things that are occurring during the COVID-19 crisis that has us all in a very different life that will probably never be the same again. My name is Kip Williams. This is Desolation Angel Radio. And an episode a week, I either do a video or an audio solo show and try and provide information and resources. But tonight is that solo show. And in the other half of it, I think you're going to get some raw, unfiltered me, because I've gotten a lot of other people's opinions and feelings about what's happening, how it's happened, how it's affecting them, how it's affecting their world and their life. And because of what I do, I get to see a lot of that. And when I say what I do, you'll hear more about that in the first voiceover segment. But welcome to the show. I always try and start off with a piece of music that is appropriate, and I can't think of we, of course, will close with John Prine tonight because it's just me. There have been so many touching tributes to him, but the two that affected me the most because of the styles of music that I played for 8 years on this show when it was a music show once a week for a couple hours, the two most touching tributes I read were Sturgill Simpson and Jason Isbell. And I will attempt to find those because it's not just for John Prine. It's everyone who has lost someone. And the actual count now is staggering, the number of people we have lost in just the space of 6 weeks to just this one disease, just this one airborne virus-caused disease. I think the two things I read, a lot of people would say about everyone they've lost, about each soul, each person. So you'll get those tonight, too, the tributes written by Sturgill Simpson and by Jason Isbell. We're going to start off tonight with somebody else who has been diagnosed with COVID-19 and is not in the hospital, at least not yet, and is at home. But Jackson Brown has been diagnosed with COVID-19, and I've loved Jackson since I was 14, 15 years old. So we're talking six decades. Jackson Brown, Barricades of Heaven.
Thank you.
Pages weary years from learning, straight into the night, our hearts were flown. Better bring your own redemption when you come to the barricades of heaven where I'm from. Stars above and the lights below. Among those there to test their fortunes and their wills, I lost track of them all long ago. Pages turning, pages weary years from learning. Straight into the night, our hearts were flung. Better bring your own redemption when you come to the barricades of heaven where I'm from. Childhood comes for me at night. Voices of my friends, your face bathing me in light. Hope that never ends. Pages turning, pages torn and pages burning, faded pages open in the sun. Better bring your own redemption when you come to the barricades of heaven where I'm from. Kids of heaven where I'm from.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Jackson Browne, Barricades of Heaven. I love that line. You better bring your own redemption when you come. When we get in the back half of this voiceover, we'll talk about that. Because it actually has some meaning for me personally and to me. It does. So the numbers. And I am going to, even though this is a show where I try and give a lot of hope, let's get realistic about numbers. This is April 14th. People are beginning to chafe at the social distancing. What's called social distancing is physical distancing. This is not the flu. This is not the common cold. This is a virus that is transmitted person to person in airborne fashion, but they've also found it living on shoe soles. It lives on hard surfaces, plastic, stainless steel, for 3-4 days. It is a living thing. It's a living thing, and it wants to live, and it wants to host inside the human body. It's novel to the human body. It's new. So here's where we're at, because right now there are 547, this moment, 9:05 p.m., there are 547,627 confirmed cases in the United States alone, 500,000 cases, with a total of 21,662 deaths. Now think about this, folks. This is all pretty much since just about, what, there were 15 cases back at the start of February? Where I live, New York, where a lot of you that listen come from, where I live, New York. New York, the figures that Cuomo gave this morning, we are over the 10,000 death mark in the state of New York. 10,000 people to this disease alone in the space of a few weeks, with over 200,000 cases. Think about that. The county I live in, Erie County, and I realize that most of the disease and the death is concentrated down near New York City and the six counties around that. However, we've always said it would march west as the New York City area begins to level off, not get better. They're leveling off on the number of admissions, which is up in the thousands every day, and leveling off on the deaths every day. In my county, Erie County, where Buffalo is, we had our two deadliest days for deaths the last 2 days. So it's starting to climb. We always said it would march west. And I know the weather is getting warmer. I know people want out until we have testing, until we know who's had it, who's immune, who doesn't have it, until we have good procedures in place. That's not going to happen. Erie County Exec Mark Poloncar is tonight, on Tuesday night, issued a new emergency order, an executive order, that closes every campground in the county, private and public, period, at 9 a.m. Tomorrow morning. And it is. Prohibits the use of any camping cabin, camping unit, campsite, or seasonal campsite. It covers campgrounds as defined by state law, and those all require a permit to operate. We can expect that to march west. Even though our numbers are leveling off, we need to continue to do the right thing. And part of that right thing, you've heard me talk about it. I started and run a private charity called the Nomad Project, which never, it normally was something that ran around the holidays, took care of missions and shelters, Children's Hospital, a VA hospital. I just kept it going because I sat there in January because of my job, which I had at the time, looking at numbers overseas, knowing what was coming and being horrified. So long before it was fashionable, I was wearing a mask and gloves and doing what I needed to do. And then as it really began to roll in, I took on vulnerable populations, people over 70, cancer patients, transplant patients, underlying heart and lung conditions, things like diabetes, people who should not be out because their risk of dying if they contract this is so high. And that's what I've been doing. Hooked up now with Feed More for Western New York, to do more grocery delivery and pharmacy delivery. And I realize I'm in a risk category. I am. But it needs to be done. And I'm the kind of person who, when I see something like that that needs to be done, I do it. But there's so many other people like me who are all jumping forward to help. And it's amazing watching these souls go to work. And there's so many resources available for people. If you are in Erie County, all you have to do is get on Facebook. If you've got Facebook, look for the Buffalo Mutual Aid Network. That site is a group where you can put a request in. It was so well organized and put together. There are so many forms on there that you can just download, fill out, and they're Google Docs that all you got to do is just reinstall them back in the drive, and your information there is updated, whether you need something or want to volunteer for something. And so many groups like that have sprung up around the country. They took their model off the Seattle area. A friend of mine and I, Richard, who's been on the show yesterday, had reason for, and this is how things work. A friend of mine in Virginia was in a very nervous, agitated state about a friend of hers who's disabled, who takes care of her disabled mother. And they only had 2 days of food left. And so from Virginia, she got a hold of me and said, "Do you know anybody in Boston?" So I got a hold of Richard. And we looked up, and the Greater Boston Area Mutual Aid Network is on Facebook. Wherever you live, there is probably a mutual aid network with people who are willing to put themselves on the line to get you food and get you your pharmacy, get you what you need. AARP, if you're over 50, they launched an online tool to help people find support groups for COVID-19. Those resources are there. There are people that are willing to help you. You are not in this alone. None of us is in it alone. You know, you don't have to be. Yes, physically, we have to be isolated from one another to stop the transmission of this, to stop it from continuing to kill people. But it's there. The resources are there. Wherever you live, I guarantee you, there are mutual aid networks that have sprung up with people saying, Chautauqua County started one. Where I live, wherever you live, it's there. That's a guarantee. So those resources are there, mutual aid networks and good helping souls, people responding to their better angels and finding down inside themselves the thing they need to find in order to make sure things are okay. I do minor home repairs. It's not about me breaking quarantine, breaking lockdown. If you've not seen a video or not seen pictures of me on Facebook, long before it was recommended that people wear masks, was wearing one, and I wear two masks and single-use gloves. I don't want you, whomsoever you may be, within 8 foot of me. I assume I have it and I'm carrying it asymptomatically. There are people that now they are finding, it's not about 2 weeks, they have carried it asymptomatically for 30, 37 days. Still active and still alive, and they're still doing fine. They're not showing a fever, cough, chest tightness. They're just carrying it. But they can infect somebody who could wind up in a hospital, or they could infect somebody who then could carry it asymptomatically to somebody else in their family who could wind up in the hospital. And then there's another percentage of that that wind up in ICU with a ventilator down their throat, and a percentage of them who don't live. Yes, they are working hard to find medicines to treat what's happening. A vaccine to prevent it. We're probably a year away from that. We do need widespread testing, the antibody test. Right now, the National Institute of Health, if you look up active COVID-19 studies, the National Institute of Health has an active study. That's something you can participate in. Interview over the phone. Draw your own blood at home, send it in and see if you have the antibodies. Another way you can help, National Institute of Mental Health is doing an active study. It takes about 20 minutes to fill out the questions. They send it every 2 weeks. They want to do it through 6 months worth to see what the mental and emotional effects of isolation and quarantining are on people in general. And those are ways to participate and help. Again, more resources available for you. State of New York has partnered with, and I'm scrolling down through my timeline to find it, because I posted it. But the state of New York has partnered with a company with small, short mental and emotional wellness guidelines, things that you can do for free, you know, period. And it's there for you. I'll get there. I got to get past the one I put up that was a joke, which was Sunrise with Godzilla in it. Headspace. Headspace.com is now open and free, and they've got a whole free collection of mindfulness, meditation, movement, and sleep exercises. It's free to anybody. So there's resources that are springing up because we are all we have, and there's so many good people stepping forward. So yes, the numbers are starting to level off, but they're starting to level off because we all, and I'm talking about the population dense areas, went into lockdown, and the other part of it is this is primarily concentrated on the East Coast, the West Coast, and down south in New Orleans. Detroit and Chicago are hot spots, but everybody else has yet to experience it, and it will march towards you. It will. Unless we find a way to, test the border of a state, quarantine. So I don't know. It could be a long summer. Most of the, even Burning Man canceled. I want folks to really get it through their head how serious this is. When this started, South by Southwest canceled, Disney World closed, Disneyland closed, Universal closed, NBA shut down their season, the NHL shut down their season. Today is opening day of Major League Baseball, should be. No Major League Baseball, no NASCAR. There's multi-million dollar enterprises that are not making money, and they shut down. That's how serious this is. South by Southwest shut down. Every festival I know of here in Western New York has canceled for this summer. And trust me, Western New York lives for music festivals. It lives for festivals. The Allentown Art Fair is canceled. That's huge for a lot of artists, but it's canceled. Burning Man canceled. That's the ultimate anarchist playground in the middle of the desert. And for safety's sake, they canceled. This is real, and it's with us, and it's going to be with us. So that's why I keep listing all these resources. It's why I keep bringing people on. So I've had so many people on. And we talk about things beyond those resources, like mutual aid networks and mental health, financial resources, because everybody's out of work. You realize if you are a 1099 person, an independent contractor, that the Small Business Administration has a $10,000 loan. The loan is in quotes. It basically something you don't have to pay back. It's an economic injury disaster loan advance, up to $10,000 for those people like me who are contract people and 1099 people. New York State, at least I know, in unemployment, there is a way to go through that system. And if you get a hold of me privately, I'll walk you through. We have to do it almost with me talking you through on the screen over the phone. But there's a way to apply for unemployment, even if you're somebody who is a gig worker or a contract worker. So you can get some form of unemployment check. The IRS opened up its portal so those people who don't normally file taxes can get a $1,200 stimulus check. Again, that's something that if you get a hold of me, I'll walk you through it. To know how to do all those things and get through it. And if you're wondering how you can help and you don't want to leave your house, it's okay to be afraid. It's okay to be scared. You know, you can do things like learn how to navigate those sites and tell your friends about it. Volunteer for the National Institute of Mental Health Study. Be a lot of the mutual aid networks, a lot of the food banks and food pantries need people that are willing to work the phones at home. So that those people, I mean, last Saturday morning, food bank in San Antonio, the lineup at 5 a.m. was close to a couple thousand cars. All it took was a couple weeks for people to be out of food and out of money. They didn't have any. It's gone. And that's realistic for those people that aren't working. But we can get through this. There's so many people stepping up. There are so many, I like to call them fallen angels because I've been one for a long time. I got a broken halo and clip wings. But there's a lot of people out there who step up to help and want to do the right thing and want to do right by other human beings. And it's wonderful. It's incredible. And the reason I say that is you can hear it in my voice tonight. Do I worry? Yeah, I worry. My oldest son is an ICU RN in a COVID-19 unit in Detroit, a hotspot. One of my friends down in New Orleans, a dear friend, someone I love, her mother, who is also a friend and someone I love, is a respiratory therapist in a COVID-19 unit. So there's times when I get irritated with people who don't take this serious, yeah, because I know people, and my son is one of them, my son, that are risking their lives every day to save their patients and risking their lives for you. This is real. This is very real. You know, sometimes I have to talk about reality, and here's the reality. If you reach the acute stage with it, if it hammers into you hard, you go in the hospital alone. Your family can't be with you. They can't be with you if you have to be intubated, which is put into a medical coma with a tube put down your throat. And if you're one of those people who dies from this, you're going to die with your lungs feeling like they're full of spun broken glass and no family by your side, just a respiratory therapist or a nurse or somebody with you. And it's not a joke when you see the bodies are being stacked up in warehouses and refrigerated trailers because the coroners can't handle it. The overload as it is, and because it is this disease, the coronavirus COVID-19, there are different precautions that have to be taken when preparing a body. So yeah, that was real. I mean, that wasn't faked. The pictures of the trenches on Harrison's Island in New York with casket after casket in it. Yeah, visible from the air. That's real. So it's more important than ever that you take care of yourself. I get so irritated when I'm out doing these runs and I see people with no mask and no gloves and they're not even watching whether they get within 6 foot of me or not. Because it isn't about me. I will protect myself. I will do it as well as I can. Yes, I'm exposing myself when I go out there. That's voluntary on my part. But when you take no precautions, those are the people that I'm going to be the first ones to gasp in horror, why me and how did this happen to me? Because it will if we don't keep the curve flattened. If we don't do all the things we need to do to stay safe and be cognizant of members of our own family, members of our own extended families, friends who have those underlying conditions. This pandemic, this disease is interesting because it's ripped the mask away. It's revealed who people really are. You can see who the angels are. You can see who the helpers are. You can see who is out there doing their best to make things better, to make a difference. There are so many houses I deliver to. You can see the fear in people's eyes, and you can see the loneliness. You can see them scared. There's people I deliver to that are embarrassed. They're embarrassed. It's the first time in their lives they had to ask somebody else to do something for them. And the ones that can't pay for it, that we have to depend on donations to give them to, they're even more embarrassed. But they're so grateful to have somebody take care of them. And it isn't about me, because there's hundreds of me's out there. It's about the people we're trying to help. I suppose I'm in a reflective mood tonight. On the one hand, we're trying our best to bring things back to normal. I'm excited. The spoken word troupe that I used to perform with down in New Orleans has gone to an online, all online presentation. And there was a lot of my work that was taped before I left. And they're going to start to use that along with a bunch of other brilliant, beautiful, creative minds. And then told me to get busy and record the rest of my stuff here at home that isn't recorded, so that we all can continue. Those kind of things excite me, you know. The weather is turning. I get to get out and play in the yard and plant a garden. I advise everybody to plant a garden this year. Okay? Plant a garden. I was talking with a friend of mine today. There's life BC and there's life AC. BC is before Corona. AC is after Corona. And I think, and you've heard me say it on the show over and over, We substituted texting and social media communication for real communication and connection, and it isn't. It's not. I kill, metaphorically, to hear somebody's voice. I love talking to people on the phone, and I can't wait to see them again. Even if I can't hug them, but just to see their face, you know? And we'll come out of this, but and maybe it'll be different this time. Yes, suffering has been very unevenly distributed during this, but the collective nature of this terror, maybe it'll mean that we'll remember together what we move on from too quickly alone. Maybe we'll finally take in what we know but nevertheless manage to put out of our minds all the time, that life is precious and finite, that we cannot know when the end is coming. What we find in life that's beautiful and just and true, it deserves our focus a lot more than what's annoying or inconvenient it does. Because you know what this is really all about? This is all about teaching us that this is about our connections and friendships with people, about the souls we're surrounded by, and about how silly and stupid and pitiful we can all get sometimes. We'll freely admit all my mistakes. I own them. And hopefully those all stay BC, before Corona. And coming out of AC, remember the lessons I'm learning while I'm out on the street right now, trying to take care of vulnerable populations, I have a group of people, a group of friends that I text every day and talk to, at least a couple of them, to say, are you okay? Tell me you're okay. And they trust me, and they tell me when they're having a bad day and their fears. And you know what? We're becoming better friends because of it. We're becoming better people because of it. And I don't want to lose those lessons coming out of this if I come out of this. I don't know what's true for you. What I would hope is true is this, that you are learning to live comfortably with yourself as you are. That this has been a long enough time and will continue to be a long enough time that you can get a look at who you are. I hope that you understand that everybody's different, that this is a collective trauma response and everybody has responded to it differently. And yes, there are causes and issues to take up because there have been profiteers, there have been complete assholes. There have been people who've taken advantage of things. There are people who have used this situation for their advantage, and they're never to be forgiven. But everybody else, I mean, yeah, the people that led us into this, they should never be forgiven. The people that ignored this when they saw it coming from across the sea and let good people die, let people die who are moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas and aunts and uncles and sons and daughters. But everybody else, those of us that are just having to live with it, it's just a collective trauma response, and we're all doing the best we can. Be easy on one another. Remember the lessons that come out of this. I'm going to read a couple things, and I think they apply not just to John Prine, because they were written for John Prine, but I hope that they apply to everyone in your life, and I hope they apply to the people whose lives have been lost, to all of those souls. Sturgill Simpson wrote this about John Prine. I'm very sorry it took me so long. I had to go into the woods and just feel this for a while. You left on a gorgeous moon. There are sometimes people in this life that you meet, seldom and few and far between, it would seem, whose souls are so good and pure and beautiful that when they leave, it seems, if only for a brief while, that everything else good and pure and beautiful in this world just left along with them. It blows you apart, leaving everyone else to see you broken. But then you come out of the woods and the funk to see the signs of spring all around you and remember the joy and love they put into the world by always giving so much of themselves, and you suddenly see them everywhere. There is so much I never said only because I didn't want to bother you with it after all. You never asked to be John Prine. There is so much I'll never get to say now. You reminded me so much of my grandfather. It hurts sometimes. I never told you that. I will miss the tours. I will miss our lunches. I will miss you listening to me bitch and complain about all the things you understood all too well and making me feel better sometimes by just sitting there and saying nothing. I will miss catching flies in midair with my hand just to make you laugh. I will miss showing up to the office and knowing I just missed you there by finding my drums upside down. I will miss your corny-ass jokes. I will miss you every day. So long, old man. You will always be loved. And that was from Sturgill Simpson about John Prine. And it's important because, you know, a friend of mine, it was the anniversary of her sister's death yesterday. And she was having a really hard day. And she would. There's no reason not to have a hard day. And somebody sent her that. And it helped her. Because it is about things being beautiful and remembering the beautiful parts of people. And when I talk about BC and AC, maybe that's another lesson that we all need to learn, that we all need to understand, that we need to learn to forgive quicker. I know it was something that I had to learn real fast in this. We need to learn to forgive quicker. We need to learn that everybody's precious, that everybody counts for something. And remember, the people that we love and the people that we care about and the people that mean so much to us, you know, and because that's what I'm learning. That's what I'm really learning, you know, about, well, I get out and do these runs, is learning to look into people's eyes and see who they are, you know, and it's amazing. Jason Isbell, another one of my favorites on this show, one of my favorite artists in the world, wrote this in the New York Times about John Prine. And it was amazing, you know, it was truly amazing to read this. Because this is the time when we need our writers and our musicians and our artists. That's why I do this show every night, to document what this is all about. This is what Jason had to write. A few years ago, my wife Amanda Shires was touring in Scandinavia with John Prine, and when they arrived in Sweden, she saw him write songwriter on his customs form as his occupation. "When did you decide that it was okay to write songwriter on these forms?" she asked him. "Today," he told her. "I usually put dancer." John Prine was not a dancer. He was a songwriter, one of the best that ever lived, but he did love to dance. He danced around his house in Nashville with his wife Fiona, danced in the driver's seat of his beloved Cadillac, and danced off stage every night, twirling an imaginary pocket watch. Once while performing on stage with John, I noticed him glance down past his Italian driving shoes to check the digital clock on the floor, and he saw me notice. He leaned in and whispered, "I wish we had more time." John was in his early 20s when he wrote Hello In There from a perspective of an old man sharing an empty nest with his lonely wife. Hearing him sing the song after decades of hard living and surviving numerous illnesses brought new meaning to the lyrics, now delivered by a man who had caught up with the character he created. John always said when he grew up he wanted to be an old person. His songs sounded like they'd been easy to write, like they'd just fallen out of his mind like magic. He was praised for his dry humor and love for his kindness and generosity. John had the courage to write plainly about the darkest aspects of the American experience in songs like Sam Stone about a drug-addicted Vietnam veteran, Paradise about the devastating effects of strip mining on a Kentucky town, and The Great Compromise about his disillusionment with his country. Among his peers in the legendary Nashville songwriting community of the 1980s, his songs were the gold standard. "Of all the things I love about John's songwriting, my favorite is the way he could step so completely into someone else's life. John had the gift and the curse of great empathy. In songs like Hello In There and Angel from Montgomery, he wrote from a perspective clearly very different from his own, an old man and a middle-aged woman. But he kept the first-person point of view. He wrote those songs and the rest of his incredible debut album while a young man working as a letter carrier in Chicago. Angel from Montgomery opens with the line, "I am an old woman named after my mother." I remember hearing his 1971 recording of this song for the first time and thinking, no, you're not. Then a light bulb went on and I realized that songwriting allows you to be anybody you want to be, so long as you get the details right. John always got the details right. If the artist's job is to hold a mirror up to society, John had the cleanest mirror of anyone I've ever known. Sometimes it seemed like he had a window and he would climb right through. And it was more to John's life than music. John and Fiona Prine had a beautiful relationship, loving and balanced and kind. Fiona understood John better than anyone else. After Amanda and I were married, Amanda started asking all the couples we knew, "What's the secret to staying together?" John and Fiona gave the same answer, and it was the best one we've heard so far. Stay vulnerable. John remained vulnerable in love and in his work. He never played it safe. When I was a baby, my 17-year-old mother would lay me on a quilt on the floor of our trailer in Alabama and play John Prine albums on the stereo. 40 years later, my daughter would call him Uncle John as he bounced her on his knee. My wife and I would sing his songs with him in old theaters or sometimes in his living room. In the summer, we'd all eat hot dogs with our feet dangling in the swimming pool. Now he's gone and my heart is broken. This week, John danced off this stage and onto the next one, and I like to think he's somewhere sharing a song and a cocktail with all the friends he outlived. And maybe that's what got to me. Stay vulnerable. So I'm feeling really vulnerable tonight, and really raw, and really open, and really human. And I don't know if what I'm doing is the right thing. I don't know if what I'm doing out there trying to help those vulnerables is the right thing. I don't know if putting this show out every night for you all to have something to connect to is the right thing, but I think it is. I think it's the right thing to do to try and pay back some of the red in my ledger and pay the world and people back for having such a good life and putting up with me when I was at my worst, because I can be a real asshole when I'm at my worst. But when I'm at my best, this is what I do right here. The resources are there to help you. And if you've got the strength right now, if your trauma response is such that you can help, then please do. And if your trauma response is such that it isn't, well then, you take care of yourself and be kind and good to yourself. The two songs I'm going to close with tonight, of course I'm going to close with John Prine when I get to heaven. But before that, I played this one other time, I think last month. I went to the Walter Kerr Theater on Broadway, which is now dark, to see Bruce Springsteen live solo. And it was a fabulous show, because I've grown up with Bruce and he's written my life. And the intro to Born in the USA made me absolutely sob, and it fits so well with John's song, When I Get to Heaven. I wish you all peace and health and happiness. I want you to stay safe. I do. And entirely different things to say tonight before I got on the air, but I decided to just let it roll. I love you all, and I thank you for a really great life. I'm looking forward to what comes after COVID-19. I want to see where it goes. I'll talk to you again this week. I've got so many great people lined up. Donna Holslander, Elizabeth Whitaker, Jesse Skywalker, Jessica Iwanek, Cynthia Vogel. They'll all be on the rest of the nights this week. But for now, just sit back, listen to this, and thank you all for indulging me.
It was a beautiful fall November evening. It was during the writing of my book. I drove back to my neighborhood where I grew up. Looking for, but I still don't have a fucking clue. All I know is the streets were dead empty and the whole place looked like it had been locked down since 1955. My corner church was silent and unchanged, no weddings, no funerals. I rolled slowly another 50 yards up my block to visit my great tree and it was gone. It had been cut to the street since the last time that I drove through. So I got out of the car and I looked down and there was a square of musty earth that held the remaining snakes of its roots on the edge of the parking lot. So I reached down, picked up a handful of dirt and I just kind of ran it through my hands. And my heart sank like a kid who'd suffered some irretrievable loss, you know, like some piece of me was gone. I don't know, I guess it was just that it had been there long before I was. I assumed it would be there long after I was gone, and I liked that. It felt eternal. It was at the center of our street, and it had rooted our neighborhood for so long. So I sat there for a while, just cursing the county and listening to the sounds of the evening come on. And I looked again, and I realized it was gone, but some Some essential piece of it was still there, the air and the space above its roots. I could still feel the life and the soul and the light. My childhood friend there. It's just that its leaves, its branches, and its massive trunk were now outlined, shot through by evening stars and sky. But my great tree's life couldn't be ended or erased so easily from this place because it's history. And history matters. Its imprint was too great, it was too old, and it was too strong, and it had been there too long to be done away with so easily. It had stood witness to everything that had happened on these small streets beneath its arms, all the joy and all the heartbreak and all the life. And when we live amongst ghosts, always trying to reach us from that shadow world, they're with us every step of the way. You know, my dead father's still with me every day. I miss him, and if I had a wish, oh man, I wish he could have been here to see this. But I visit with him every night, a little bit. That's a grace-filled thing. And Clarence, I get to see him be with Clarence a little bit every night. And Danny, Walter, Bart, my own family, so many of them gone from these houses that are now filled by strangers, but the soul... Soul's a stubborn thing. Doesn't dissipate so quickly. Souls remain. They remain here in the air, in empty space, dusty roots, and sidewalks that I knew every single inch of, like I knew my own body as a child, and in the songs that we sing. You know, that is why we sing. We sing for our blood and for our people, because that's all we have at the end of the day. Each other, and maybe that's what I'm looking for when I go down there. I just want to commune with the old spirits, stand in their presence, feel their hands on me one more time. Anyway, once again, I stood in the shadow of my old church, you know. You know what they say about Catholics. Yeah, there's no getting out. No, you know, it's, they got you. The bastards got you when the getting was good. They did their work hard, and they did it well. Because the words of a very strange but all too familiar benediction came back to me that evening. And I want to tell you, these were words that as a kid, I mumbled these things, I sing-songed them, I chanted them, bored out of my fucking mind, in an endless drone before class every fucking day. Every day, the green blazer, the green tie, the green trousers, the green socks of all of St. Rose's unwilling disciples. You know, but for some damn reason, as I sat there on my street that night, you know, mourning my old tree, and once again surrounded by God, those are the words that came back to me, and they flowed differently. Was our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on this earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day, just give us this day, and forgive us our sins, our trespasses, as we may forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil, all of us, forever and ever. Amen. Oh, may God bless you, your family, and all those that you love. And thanks for coming out tonight.
When I get to heaven, I'm going to shake God's hand, thank him for more blessings than one man can stand. Then I'm gonna get a guitar and start a rock and roll band. Check into a swell hotel. Ain't the afterlife grand? And then I'm gonna get a cocktail, vodka and ginger ale. Yeah, I'm gonna smoke a cigarette that's 9 miles long. I'm gonna kiss that pretty girl on the tilt-a-whirl. 'Cause this old man is going to town. Then as God is my witness, I'm getting back into show business. I'm going to open up a nightclub called the Tree of Forgiveness and forgive everybody ever done me any harm. Why, I might even invite a few choice critics, those syphilitic parasitics. Buy them a pint of Smithwick's and smother them with my charm. 'Cause then I'm going to get a cocktail, vodka and ginger ale. Yeah, I'm going to smoke a cigarette that's 9 miles long. I'm going to kiss that pretty girl on the tilt-a-whirl. Yeah, this old man is going to town. Get to heaven, I'm gonna take that wristwatch off my arm. What are you gonna do with time after you bought the farm? And then I'm gonna go find my mom and dad. And good old brother Doug, well, I bet him and cousin Jackie are still cutting up a rug. I wanna see all my mama's sisters, 'cause that's where all the love starts. I miss them all like crazy. Bless her little hearts. And I always will remember these words my daddy said. He said, "Buddy, when you're dead, you're a dead peckerhead." I hope to prove him wrong. That is, when I get to heaven. 'Cause I'm going to have a cocktail, vodka and ginger ale. Yeah, I'm gonna smoke a cigarette that's 9 miles long. I'm gonna kiss that pretty girl on the tilt-a-whirl. Yeah, this old man is going to town. Yeah, this old man is going to town.